Hey listeners, before I get into this episode, I have a quick ask to make. I started this podcast as a research project on how to be a top individual contributor in the product design space. My goal for the show was to learn what it takes to be an individual contributor that is doing amazing, impactful work that they love doing day in and day out and getting paid top dollar while they do it. Becoming that type of individual contributor is the ultimate job security. With close to 100 hours of interview recordings, this has naturally led to the creation of the short-form video articles that synthesize my learnings into 10-minute listens of actionable content. You might recognize these as my morning walk episodes or the hashtag shorts episodes. To my surprise, those episodes have been very well received and listeners have enjoyed the synthesis of what I've learned. This has led to the next chapter of my research project, which is beginning to synthesize what I've learned into a new newsletter called Thinking Out Loud About Design that you can subscribe to right now for free. Thinking Out Loud About Design is an email newsletter and podcast that basically contains all my synthesis for my long-form interviews. It's pure distilled learnings that you can apply to your career immediately. This content is for you if you are a couple years into your career and you're trying to make that move from mid-level to senior designer and senior designer to staff designer. I mainly focus on becoming high-performing individual contributors in the product design industry. A free subscription gives you full access to the newsletter, podcast episodes, and website. You won't have to worry about missing anything because every new edition of the newsletter goes directly into your inbox. So my ask is this. If you have gotten any value out of the way of product design, or if it's helped you in any way or someone you know, please subscribe to Thinking Out Loud About Design and get the distilled learnings on being a staff-level individual contributor. You can find a link to the newsletter in the show notes of every episode of this podcast and on my LinkedIn page. Just look up Caden Damiano. Thanks again for listening and supporting the way of product design. I wouldn't be doing this if you guys weren't listening. Now, on to the show. Welcome to the Way of Product Design. I'm Caden Damiano. We know design is valuable, but how can you unlock its true value and tie your design work to business impact? This show interviews product designers, product managers, and tech leads from places like Google, Domo, Divi, IBM, Intuit, and Uber to find out what makes a valuable product designer and how you can be one as well. Hey, listeners. So just to let you know, this is the last episode I'm recording in 2020. So congratulations, Terrell Cobb, who I'm interviewing right now. He's a really nice capstone interview for a crazy year. Terrell Cobb has a bachelor's of fine arts in, well, I guess it's bachelor in arts in graphic design. Has been to places like worked for Barclays Bank, RegAid Consumer and Sensory Software, FedEx, Capital One, where he really made a transfer to management. It looks like you also started your design lead at FedEx. Like that's when you started transferring into more leadership roles, and now you're at Microsoft. And Terrell, can you just briefly introduce yourself to the listener? And also, I'm going to nest a question into your introduction. In your description of your job at Microsoft, you describe yourself as a consensus leader. So as you introduce yourself, can you explain what a consensus leader is?
Right on. So what's up, everybody? I'm Terrell Cobb. I am a design lead here at Microsoft. While here at Microsoft, like I've looked at what consensusship looks like, and what that means is I'm willing to find out what works for everyone and drive that initiative in the best way possible that includes everyone in the room and also everyone that's around the project itself. So that's just partial to some of that question that you were just asking me, but it actually anchors back into most of my career as well. I think that consensus leadership piece has always been brewing underneath the lines of me just being a sports person altogether. I think with all the sports that I played in all of my life, pretty much I've been somewhat of that captain on every team. So consensuship is pretty much one of those things that comes natural to me because I'm always thinking about the team and how the team actually operates. I've been in the design world for roughly about 10 years, anchored into those major giants that you just mentioned. But there's also some history and also some interesting facts about the way I got into design.
Yeah, like, so I actually really like the story of how you even found digital product design. Yeah, you know, we talked before. You talked about your time in collegiate sports, and I think, like, can you tell me a little bit about how you even found out like design was a career choice?
Right on. So it's definitely a different path for that of a student athlete. When you think about a student athlete, you think about just some of the Saturdays or the Thursdays or the Fridays that you see them on TV. But there's countless hours that are happening behind that. I think my path into being introduced into design started with just being on the field, not realizing that some of the primary colors and also some of the primary processes that I was doing from a design standpoint later on in my career are actually attributed back to some of the seven cone drills or the four dot drills or the general way that you would have to position yourself to make certain tackles or score certain touchdowns, or the plays itself is just design. So my way into design, to be honest with you, I was a psych major up front. And as a psych major, I happened to have some social classes there in the art building. And one day that was there, as many other student athletes, you have work study jobs. And one of my work study jobs was actually to be the security of the Mac lab there in the art building. So as a psych major at that time, I was just, you know, like, hey, this is an easy job. I just pretty much just watch everybody who's using the computer and we're good to go. And it was just simply one of those days where I stayed over, or one of the classes actually stayed over, and they were going through Adobe Illustrator at that time. And they were talking about shapes and combining shapes at that time. Me being a illustration nerd, everything from bubble letters to drawing roses to actually doodling on cliques to doodling on notebooks and other things, that was something that kind of intrigued me a little bit. And then I asked the teacher at that day, like, well, what is this? And they're like, well, you know, this is somewhat design. You can make your illustrations move. Are you an illustrator? And instantly, that day, I basically went to the office and basically got my major changed to art at that point and never looked back.
Where would you be if you didn't have that job protecting computers? Where would you be today?
Oh, man. You know what? I had roughly about 40 hours of a 60-hour psych degree at that time. So it's a chance that I would have been a psychologist or a psychiatrist somewhere. And not to say that I'm still not doing that. So yeah. We can get into some of that in the design world.
Yeah, right. You're kind of like you're applying both, and I'm sure that served you so well in your career. Yeah. So you have a very big role in the Black designer community. I think, can you talk a little bit more about the, because I swear, listener, this all adds together. Like, it might seem like I'm going on a different direction, but this all comes together. But, you know, can you just talk a little bit about, like, how you started Dallas Black UX, why you started it, and how is that tied to your story about finding design as a career?
Right on. So, you know, Dallas Black UX was started by myself and three other major constituents of the design world in Dallas. As I was meeting with someone I was actually mentoring at that time, basically we started to say, like, well, why haven't we met each other before? And one of the biggest stigmas inside of, like, being Black in design, just maybe not even 2 to 3 years ago, is actually finding someone who actually looks like you, or being mentored by someone who looks like you. We're almost like unicorns. So you almost found yourself being the only person on campus, the only person in the building, only person on the floor. And you're constantly looking for a flavor in which design means to you, because the introductory of design is completely different for everyone. And I think that is one of the things that kind of makes it unique. So when you think about building community in itself, how can you find conversations that look like some of the conversations that you've had? How can you find critiques that look like some of the critiques that you've had? How can you find opportunities to meet other people that are doing something similar to what you're doing and making it meaningful to them? And I think one of the most important things of these communities that I've built in the past is just the simple piece of being what you weren't, being what you didn't see to everyone else.
Being what you didn't see. Can you expound a little bit more on that? That's interesting. Right on. Line.
Right on. So coming out of college for me, it was, I had an interesting jump into what design was going to be for myself. Of course, my attributes of wanting to be a designer that worked on magazines, and specifically I wanted to work for XXL, like that was the like dream job for me. I just knew I was going to be a magazine editor, like coming out of college, and partially to InDesign and Illustrator and all of those good things. But as I moved from like that print layout world, I was constantly looking for like, how can I get necessary feedback that's also pertinent from leaders that are out there, but then also someone who looks like me? I just noticed that it was just extremely hard to find. Now, granted, LinkedIn wasn't what it was back in those days. At those times, and I'm kind of dating myself, but pretty much Facebook was used for homework from college. So it wasn't to that point of networking just yet. But when I look back on those days, like, it was a constant search for validation of like, hey, I can be at the top of that pyramid one day, or I can be at the mid tier of that pyramid one day, if I only knew what it looked like. And it was somewhat of a mix of, hey, am I a marketing person? Like, well, wait a second. No, I'm not a marketer. Yeah. Am I a lawyer or account executive? No, I'm not account executive. Okay, so I'm a creative. So where are other creatives that kind of look like me? And it literally just fell in my lap one day as I was basically, this is probably showing like how bad I wanted to stay in the design field. Finishing up my actual degree, I got an internship at a local ad agency, Jones Hewitt and Partners, there in Topeka, Kansas. And while there, I was also working a 35-hour job. They only allowed me to work 35 hours a week, or 30 hours a week, job teaching job skills and life skills readiness to 15 to 21-year-olds. And then also, I was working as a FedEx unboxer at night from roughly about 3 a.m. to 8 a.m. in the morning. So I was doing all of this just so that my free internship that I was doing on Thursdays and sometimes and mostly Fridays gave me that opportunity to get into the design world. And I kind of bargained my way into the 30-hour job at the Topeka Youth Project as being like, hey, I'll do all of your graphic designs for you if you allow me to also work this other job as well. So it was one of those things where I was kind of creating my own path that I didn't see myself. And while there at the internship, that's where I met another gentleman who was pretty much like a webmaster or web designer. And it was like, well, wait a second, like, you're doing what I'm doing, but you're doing it on the web. Teach me. I need to know this. And that was like literally my first person that I ever met that looked like me that was doing design. Outside of him, there was nowhere that I've seen on the internet, or it was almost like it was a unicorn-like field.
Well, yeah, and I just interviewed Patricia Dwyer at Intuit. She's a content designer there, and we were just actually discussing like how, like what you're getting into design story and everything, and like the why are designers so like happy is because we're just happy to be here because the alternative didn't look as good. Like the alternative reality of us not finding and stumbling into this field is just like, it's a sobering enough truth to be like, hey, I'm just happy to be in design. I'm happy to be solving cool problems and stuff like that. And so when you talk about like being what you didn't see, it's, you know, it's you almost were gravitating naturally just based off like your personality and your skill sets and stuff. And you being a designer, knowing that like you didn't see the traditional path, right? And for you, you know, and for you, is it important to have someone that looks like you, because you could kind of map out like, okay, this person's from a similar background so that you could learn from their story and kind of emulate them. Is that the point of it?
Yes. So if I were, and this is, you know, getting to the metaphorical aspect of just looking at design all up, if I were to ask you to describe success, you would go back to some of the examples of what you've seen of success. If I were to ask you to describe dismay or disappointment, you would go back to specific examples of those things to kind of go back and describe it. It's something that's in you. You've experienced it before. So therefore, you can actually go back and grasp what that feels like, how it was for you in context, and probably even go into detail if you needed to. Now, if I asked you, you know, what does a lawyer look like? You have some attribute in mind, right? Mm-hmm. But if, you know, if I asked you, like, what does a design leader look like that is African-American? It starts to get gray.
Yeah.
And I think because of that, and because earlier in my career, like, you know, somebody reached down and actually taught me, you know, some of these things and introduced me into more of the digital aspect of the field. I've always had that open heart of what if that person didn't do that? So that's why it's extremely important to me that people who reach out to me, I basically show them that, hey, like, you know, if you were sent to me in a certain way, like you best believe, like I'm on your team now. And I'm hoping that you will be exactly what I'm doing or what somebody else similar is doing for you in the future. And that's kind of like one of my biggest requirements from anyone that I'm mentoring, in which, like, you know, I'm currently mentoring maybe 5 or 6 people across the country. One of my biggest requirements back to them is that you find somebody else to do the same thing that I'm doing for you. And that's, I never want anything paid from it. I never want any like gifts. I don't want any of those things. Like, only thing I really want from you is for you to throw that rope back and find somebody else to help.
Yeah. You know, going back to like your lawyer question, like if someone asked me like what a lawyer does, I could immediately, because I come from a family where all my grandpas, a lot of my grandfathers practiced law in one way, shape, or form. So I would pull from my experience, from their stories they've told me about the field. I actually told my grandpa that I was going to be a lawyer at one point, and he was disappointed. But just imagine, you know, just imagine like not having the a grandpa that was a lawyer to discourage me from being a lawyer was enough for me to find a better career path, right? Like, he's like, are you sure there's nothing else you want to do?
Right.
But I not a lot of people have that. And especially in underrepresented communities, I don't think there are those people to discourage you from those more traditional routes, you know, and encourage you to be like, hey, you know what? You're a creative person. I see that you doodle. I see that you like making things. Have you ever considered this? And I don't think there's a lot of that. I mean, I would say that as a whole, that's a big problem, design industry as a whole, because we're still, people are still stumbling in and doing boot camps to figure out like the UX design. Like that's like their second, like a lot of people are pivoting into design still. But I mean, if it's a problem as a whole, I can only imagine that in underrepresented communities, it's magnified.
Indeed. I think the option of being a designer in underrepresented communities isn't really pertinent as, you know, doctor plus degree equals success, or lawyer plus degree equals success, or X plus, you know, Y equals success. I think, you know, when we start talking about communities themselves, every community is different, and every person is different. But I think there is something to attribute from the design side back to the connection of art that is in schools. And when we think about grade school arts, and for all the artists out there, you'll probably geek out with me a little bit here when I say this, you can kind of remember that little pail that you would take with you that would kind of have your crayons and your eraser and your pencil and your colored pencils and possibly your glue that was there because you were going to do some form of art that day. But in all reality, when you go back and look at those things, like elementary school kind of taught you the basics of colors and how you're actually looking at subjectivity of basically, you know, the many baby Picassos that are out there that are drawing abstract faces or watercolors at that point. And as that actually transitions into middle school and where you're actually moving into more color pencils and getting into depth and actually seeing how you stack and make things on top of things and possibly, depending on the middle school that you went to, being introduced to different mediums, metal, paper, water, sand, and those attributes, right? And then by the time you get into things like high school, you've somewhat, and arguably still middle school, you're still in a point in which you've maybe done something in a newsletter or created a newsletter or created a flyer or created some form of printed media or created something digitally. I think some of you who are younger than most of us these days, like you'll never have the fun and or frustration that it took to create your MySpace page and have it all HTML'd up and writing CSS on a flash and pretty much getting it updated so you had the right type of music, the right type of animations, and making sure that it was the best representation of yourself altogether. But I think in these days, high schoolers could have that same attribute to their social media, their Snap, their Facebook and Instagram and the way that they structure their stories. But the point that I was trying to make there is that progression of art has never left us from that first grade school introductory to it. It's just only piled on to it. Now, whether the world recognizes that that is still art being done, it's actually some elements of UX that's patterned into that. And we're actually starting to kind of see some of those things where UX has been invisible throughout a collegiate career or a education career of someone leaving from grade school to college.
Yeah, like I think the creative process has always been encouraged, but it's always been kind of like a nice to have, like, you know, art's just good for culture. It triggers conversations and stuff like that. But when you ask your career counselor, like, what should I do for college? They're like, yeah, maybe you should look into computer science or a little more stable job. But like, I don't know if there's a connection between the creative process and making practical useful things, like using that creative process to make products and services that make people's lives better. Are we augment people's abilities to accomplish certain tasks? I don't know. Yeah, like I just don't think we talk about that in the educational system.
Yeah, I think it's encouraged that art And you know, art is somewhat soothing, and somewhat art is gets you to think outside of the box. But truth be told, the patterns of which UX kind of and UI kind of live throughout everything that we do. And that's always the way that I kind of teach it and walk through it myself. From if you go to like a standardized test, you know, there are some H2s, there are some H3s, there are some body texts, there's some radio buttons. There is a certain way that you need to fill in that radio button. And there's also the attribute of the way that the test is laid out. And going back to my print nerds that are out there, it just... If you could look at anything around you and not see the design in it, I definitely award you it to it. But there's a good chance that you will see design and or roughly UX attributes in everything that's around us today.
Yeah, I think like design is seeing the levers that you can pull to influence like a certain outcome. Like I think it's like defining terms. So what got me into thinking about wanting to be like a designer, even though I didn't see it at the time, you know, to use your term, was video production. And the outcome for me is like, I felt like my videos were successful if I made someone feel something or they resonated with it. And when I watch movies, I'm like, oh, they're trucking, they're panning, they're using this kind of lens. And you're asking the question, like, why are they using that lens? Like, is it to create a certain effect? I think like design, like regardless of medium, is like that intentionality to process, like under seeing like the different levers. And I think I'm saying like a British person. I think it's, well, in America it's called a lever, but you know, seeing the levers you want to pull, and that's not. Even though it's still art, like I feel like it's not getting subjective at that point, because when you actually talk about the reasons why you designed something, like using this color scheme or like why did we use like H1, H2 tags for this test when we're designing this standardized test, you're getting into principles, you're getting into customer data, you're getting into psychology and stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it. I didn't see that connection when I was being educated, that that like the creative output, the craft was always like an afterthought. But when the requirements are made to like build something, there was no thought into why the requirements are there in the first place. I don't know. Like, I'm just thinking out loud. But yeah.
Yeah, I think you're hinting toward something, right? There's a sense of familiarity and then also imagination that's inside of the design space. And if you haven't had that familiarity of, hey, that a sky could be blue, a sky can be gray, a sky could be orange, or the imagination of now that you know from your familiarity that, hey, a sky can be orange or a sky can be blue or a sky can be gray, when you're given a task to do something in a dark room if you needed to, and you only had several pencils, immediately you would think like, okay, I've seen a sky before. And since I've seen a sky before, I know I can either choose orange, gray, blue, in certain cases red, certain places green, actually achieving whatever goal that's in front of me. I think when you go back and you look at like how you jumped into like your film career, like you've seen different movies, you've seen different shots, you've seen different trailers and the way that they cut in or cut out, so much so that you could probably draw something out without even looking at something today. I think as we look at, you know, thinking about youth and jumping youth into design in this sense, how does their imagination transform what the future of what design is going to be is truly important.
Yeah, how can you build exercises and like have people like think bigger? Because either the aspect of like, oh yeah, I've seen movies, I've seen like I've tasted different types of media or film or whatever. But that's the same thing for digital product design. Like, oh, let's do it like Microsoft, or let's do it like Apple. But like, I think that's the job of a designer to say, like, break down what Apple's doing and say, that's not for us. Like, yeah, Apple does this, this, and this because of these elements, or because you, it's not a good enough answer to say, well, Apple does that because they're Apple. It's like, that's not true. It's, everything's intentional. And if you're able to like view it from that critical eye, that designer eye of like how they go about designing their ecosystems, and you can make hypotheses of like, oh, why do they do that? Why do they do it this way? And then, hey, does that apply? Could I take that good idea and remix it in a novel way for my product? Like, I think that would be like a better way to help creative individual thinking individuals in high school realize that, like, hey, this is like something that's super valuable, and companies need this type of thinking, this design thinking. And so I know that I'm going to paraphrase you from like our original this conversation in preparation for this interview, that the time frame is like the next 20 years, right? I wouldn't be like nihilistic and say that like the damage has already been done right now. We're just kind of working with it. But you did mention that really focusing in on reaching these kids in underrepresented communities when they're in high school and when they're in elementary school, so that they find out early and they can just go directly into design. Like, what are you doing in the like initiatives that you're representing in like your community, in the Black designer community, to reach out to these kids and expose them to this?
Right on. So maybe a year and a half or 2 years ago, it started with working with Impact Ventures there in the Dallas area, and also combining that with Black in Design at Capital One, along with some of the elements of DBUX as well, Dallas Black UX, to kind of do a somewhat of a workshop slash prototyping design school 60-minute class with some kids that were bussed in from the local community. They're at the Juanita Craft Center in South Dallas. And starting there kind of gave me a perspective while working with Impact Ventures to kind of think like, well, hey, if we can expose kids to different attributes of the way that they think, and using their imagination to create certain or different elements of design, they could be introduced into more elements of UX later on in the path, right? So our average age that was there for us, like maybe kids that were in just coming into the middle school age to roughly the high school age. And the challenge that was given to them is, if you could make your community better in one way, what would it be? And they had to actually go and do like the interviews with their peers as a group and start thinking about some of the things that they can actually do, right? So then we started doing like things like crazy eight sketches and, you know, 1 minute sketches to then further define and get some synthesis there. And of course, it's rapid prototyping, so you couldn't really like, you know, spend an entire day on this. So you kind of force them to kind of think on their feet a little bit, right? But just some of the things that you saw that were coming out of these participants was really amazing. So you had kids who were thinking like, you know, hey, I want to create a digital road, right? And that digital road would tell everyone when there's going to be a block party, when there's their safety hazards, and also let other kids know when to play in the street and when not to play in the street, right? There's other examples that was there of like, hey, I want to create an anti-bullying app. Like, when somebody is being bullied, they can call somebody or ping something on their app, and pretty much everyone else who knows them can come around them and they won't be bullied anymore, right? And these such of ideas exist, but they're never been tapped into in the way that we of our spaces or environments. If we're able to keep with these kids and help them understand what those ideas mean and help cultivate and help iterate those ideas, you can imagine if that same kid that's in middle school continues to develop that idea by high school, they have something on their hands. Mm. And now we've kind of taught them, like, hey, you have worked yourself from the discovery phase all the way to the delivery phase, and now you've become a personal entrepreneur of your thing. How do you want to introduce your thing back to the world? And therefore, you know, another set of group of people kind of step in from a marketing presence or, you know, just career development presence, because now these kids have learned how to take something that is pencil to paper or pen to paper to something that's tangible and real. And now they have an opportunity to kind of make it their own and pretty much look into another career path that probably wouldn't have been there before.
Well, and they could be just about to graduate high school, and they could be like, and this might have been like 5-year timeline, right? Journey map it, right? Like 5 years ago, they went to this activity that you helped organize. And then 5 years later, they're like, oh, I got to apply for colleges. What major do I want to do? You know, wait, what did that Terrell Cobb guy do? Like, what? I want to try that out. And then maybe he reaches out to you or something like that. And it's like, oh, it's called UX design. Okay, cool. I'm going to do that. Like, then you won, right? Like, that's your objective, right?
Exactly. You know, being what you don't see. And providing that perspective to not only just kids in at-risk communities, but just kids everywhere. I think my idea of the future is challenging the model of, like, you have to be something else other than design to be successful. And you can be a professional in anything, but design happens to also be one of those fields that you could be. You can use your imagination every day to build something amazing. I think that push and that feeling comes from just generally where I'm from all up. Like, being from South Florida, you see imagination and then also things that are tangible around you on a day-to-day basis. You just never know, like, how to actually attribute those things back to what you're doing as a career field. I told you I came in from a football perspective, but there's also different environments that are there. There's different types of palm trees. There's different types of skies. There's something that looks like different when a hurricane comes versus when a hurricane leaves, right? There are different car colors. There's different gatherings. And it's just a lively city at certain points, right? And there's certain things that you'll see that are related to that origin of the world. And or of the states as well. So when I think about how I think about design and how I'm introducing design to other kids, I basically want them to go back to their childhood of where they're from and start to see some of the design elements that are around them that they probably didn't think about before.
Yeah, I really like that design challenge is like a kind of break in like a 101 into design thinking for like younger kids, because like they are their community they come from, right? And they've probably had ideas of how to improve it. James Dyson says that there's a lot of people that have ideas, but there's only a few people in the world that know how to take an idea into and develop it into something you could send out to market.
Exactly.
And, you know, kind of exposing them to like, hey, because right now, like if people have ideas, there's a few solutions. It could be like, well, let's do a protest, or let's make a magazine or like a newspaper, or let's put a content bandaid on it. Like, let's just make videos about it. But it's like, how can you make a product or service or like a systematic solution? Not a lot of people have that skill set. To be like, well, like a digital, like, I mean, I think that there's something to that digital road idea, because and you can only imagine if there was a potential tragedy that influenced that idea, like, oh, my friend got hit by a car. Yes. And in his head, like he doesn't see it, but he is thinking like, how could less kids get hit by cars? And. Mm-hmm. You give them the vocabulary to like develop the idea. And you know what's funny is like just the thought I had as you talked about this is I'm like, I think we could learn something from underrepresented communities, because I feel like that's just so visceral. Like, you guys, I mean, there's just the downside, like the cost of not getting more underrepresented people into design is so high. Like, the downside's really bad if, like, you don't expose them early, right? Because they could go down, like, the wrong way or not want to, you know, pursue, like, a design career. Like, so, for example, if I didn't pursue design, I'm sure I would have, like, it would have worked out for me. Just where I'm at, you know, just white, blonde, male. Like, I would have been a lawyer. I would have been financially, economically fine. I mean, I probably wouldn't have been as happy. But it's like how can I take what you guys are doing to help, like, underrepresented communities, and how could I help, like, my younger cousins and stuff, like, discover creative technology as a field? Like, how can I, like, introduce kids and, like, younger people that, like, look, you know, talk to me and, you know, look up to me and introduce them to this concept of design thinking. I don't have to say, like, well, there's this career called UX. It's like, oh no, like, hey, let's do this activity. Let's come up with some ideas to improve your life. And that just makes them think that, know what's possible. Right. And from what you're saying is, you don't have to tell them, you just show them, and then they're hooked to what's possible.
Right. Because, like I was saying, that we're all designers. Right. And I feel like I'm the guy on stage that asked the question before every talk that basically says, OK, everyone in the room who's a designer, lift your hands up. And everybody puts their hands up. Right. But honestly, truthfully, as cheesy as it sounds, we're all designers. We're all using some form of elements that someone thought about in an intelligent way to be used for that specific use case. Whether you were a lawyer, if you decided to go into a lawyer field, the paperwork that you received was printed in a certain way, or a system kind of designed it to be in a certain way so that those words are flowing to you in the best way possible. You did some form of synthesis or some form of design thinking to kind of get you to the ideation point of knowing which arguments to argue or which ones not to argue. Going into the definition piece of just deciding, like, you know, what could be possible outcomes, and then also did some user research from the sense of looking at previous cases. I can continue to go on and on down this track, and it could be for different roles and different responsibilities that are out there and different jobs that are out there as well. I believe that we're all designers at the core, and just some of us decide to focus on the attributes on it a little bit more than others.
I really like that, because I actually thought about this, because I'm like, that's a very sore topic. Everyone's a designer. But I think what it means is, I think everyone brings some level of intentionality to it, and then some people choose to specialize in certain aspects of intentionality in a design process. So, like, yeah, you know, you and I, we design products, digital products specifically. My mother was an interior designer, and so she's solving space issues, like problems of space and navigation in a home, you know, and lawyers are really designing a case. Like, cases are designed when they're, you know, litigating, right? And it doesn't, just because you study design thinking doesn't mean you have to be a designer. You could just study design thinking and be an engineer. And I mean, the engineers that think like a design, like use design thinking while engineering, make the coolest products. Like, you know, like, you're applying like the design lens to anything. You could learn design thinking and still be a salesperson, but you're just going to be more effective because you've really nailed your value proposition and pitch.
Exactly. Exactly. And that takes you into conversational design, yes. Physical design, design of thought. It's just all around us. We're doing it, but, you know, it's just not specialized in the way that other people do it. I think as everyone becomes aware of the design world or the design field itself, it just helps you recognize what your expertise of design are. And I think we can constantly look at UX as a monolith, or people can actually look at UX as a monolith, but, you know, we're different specialties. There's different designers, right? There's designers who have come in and only done digital color colorism or system design for their entire career. But there are some designers who've been more like a Swiss Army knife, who've done, you know, IA, going into interviewing the participant, to actually thinking about the colors, thinking about the harmony, and then going into the psychology of the screen or hierarchy of the screen, going into more UX, and then someone handling UI, and then someone handling architecture, right? There's certain different flavors of what type of designer that you could be. So when I look back at like that example of a person that's an HR person who's been in HR for a certain amount of years, and they went to a design thinking course, or actually took a design thinking bootcamp.
Yeah.
When they come back to work, they're going to use some of those things that they've learned and attribute those learnings to their success. And I've actually even seen where I have a good friend who is actually in HR for, you know, 10 to 15 years, and actually took a boot camp, and now she's doing an amazing job as being a UX designer. And one of her superhero powers is the ability to de-escalate, or the ability to talk with others on how she negotiates her design. Well, how is that possible? Well, she's had these years of doing it in the HR field or HR world. So she's become extremely proficient at being a communicator. So now, as you know, being a designer, you have to communicate what does confidence look like to a user, or what does confidence look like to your partner? So those type of attributes are, you know, relevant to each one of us. And it's different for each type of designer. And I think we bring in our own superpower of design when we approach different projects and or different jobs.
That's so cool. That's some podcast episode, because it's like, you know, there's like a school of thought, like, how do we standardize the job of a designer? Because there's people from so many different backgrounds. There's some that are more inclined towards the visual side of things. There's people that are more inclined towards the IA side of things. But the way that you're putting it is like, how do we kind of encourage that? And then that, like, how, as like hiring managers, do you evaluate that talent and those strengths and those superpowers while you're building a team?
Mm-hmm. Well, think about it this way. When we're working on a new project of something, what do? Like, one of the first couple of things that we do from a discovery standpoint is we try to put ourselves inside of the user's avenues of what they're experiencing, right? So if we're building something specifically for surgeons, right? I'll just throw that out there just randomly, right? If we're building something for surgeons in a hospital, we're going to go to that hospital and see, you know, what tools a surgeon is using today. We're going to do user research at work throughout the day, and what things that they grab, what things they don't grab, what things that they need, what things that they don't need, right? And we're somewhat taking on the persona of that person. So if you can imagine it flipped, if that person brought in their talents and or attributes that they've learned over all of their career as a surgeon, and they go to work for a health company who's looking for a designer, that's a huge benefit that they're bringing into the table. Because now they know the programs in and out. They know what is needed for the patient in and out. And then now, because they've gone through some form of thought process reframe through either a boot camp or a design thinking or however they were introduced into UX in that way, now they bring a specific value to companies that are related to health, or startups that are related to health. So I think it kind of attributes itself in that way.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think, as I like progress in my career, I feel like there's just so much truth to evaluating people based off like their story, like their background, because that should show if they're going to perform well. I mean, there definitely is like positions where it's like, hey, I just need like a solid designer that I know can you know, do make the right artifacts and come in and kind of adapt to the product space. But then there's like other places where it's like, hey, this person would be really passionate about this problem space. They might not be as strong in their visual design skills, but I really feel like their contributions and insights is going to improve the product if we have them on the team. Just as a hiring manager, I feel like that's a really strong skill, is being able to evaluate potential talent based off that.
Indeed. I definitely agree with you. I think it's also attributed to the just the truth behind the designer that you recruit at that time will not be the designer that they are in 6 months, because they've learned the patterns and or environment that you brought them in. So they've been made better, and you have been made better by their particular flavor that they bring to the job itself.
Totally. Terrell, this has been an awesome conversation. I'm going to ask you one more question. To wrap things up, put a bow on it. So far, I've just really loved like your insights and just how you've been able to reframe design education in a way where you're not criticizing it. You're actually coming up with like here's my hypothesis. If we help people see like what they're not seeing, we can help them discover better career paths and stuff. So here's my question for you. What was a career setback that you're glad happened?
That's a good question. So I think about everything that has happened to me in my career as learning. I think when I was at the highest of my career, managing multiple teams in different locations across the world, and also locally, I was kind of glad that I got to that point of burnout, just so that I can know and understand what that means. And I think there are certain designers that are out there, maybe you'll understand this as well. Like, there are certain projects that you work on that can go from, 8 to 5 and you're done. There's other projects that you're working on that can go from like 6 to 9. And you're done, or 9 p.m. and you're done, right? But for some projects that you've experienced in the past, you've hit somewhat of that 1 a.m. wall, like, okay, I'm not going to go to sleep, so I might as well just continue to, you know, work on this thing, right? Yeah. It's at that point you get a Red Bull or you get coffee and you just say, okay, I have to finish this. And that 1 a.m. wall that of like, okay, if I don't go to sleep now, I'm not going to go to sleep for the rest of the night. I'm just going to crank this thing out, right? I think after I've reached, you know, several days of doing that, and understanding what true burnout means from that, and learning how to function on 1 hour of sleep or 2 hours of sleep or 3 hours of sleep, it was good for me to see it because I knew what I didn't want to replicate, if that makes any sense. That gave me somewhat of a boost to my career of confidence to know, like, okay, wait a second. I'm great at my job, but I'm not great at my life outside of my job at this moment. Like, the only thing that I'm doing for myself is sleeping, right?
Yeah.
What is the true benefit of what I'm doing right now to myself also while doing for my job? And that's when I kind of realized that, you know, there's different gasoline tanks, if you will, that you're pouring into. And you have to look at what things could you be doing outside of your job that's pouring into you, that's giving you more gasoline to get that adventure, that imagination kicking. And then also that thought process that you need to go be amazing at your current job, that you have to pour that into to get going for yourself. So I think it's that moment in my life. And I think also realizing that, you know, I have to have things outside of work that kind of get me going and get me excited.
Yeah. So having that experience of like, hey, there's more to life than work. I can still be good at my job and have hobbies and stuff has made you a better designer.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, most of the things that I do outside of work actually start to feed back into some of the things that I would do in work, right? So like, things like watching YouTube videos on how to build a house by your hands, right? Or how to, weird enough, how to sail a sailboat. Thinking about just the mechanics, the starting point to the end point, right? I love watching those maker style videos because honestly, like, I'm already putting in my head an imagination of how to build something from a toothpick to a house if I needed to.
Yeah, that's awesome. And since I'm notorious for pushing analogies too far for your gas tanks, I feel like the idea that came to mind is that burnout's like, you know, I think the only thing that people know how to put into a car is gas. Not a lot of people know that, like, they need to change the oil every few thousand miles. And, like, burnout's just like you're driving the car and you haven't changed the oil and the engine just breaks, which...
Yes.
And if we want to push it way past the usefulness of the analogy, I think the engine's your brain. Like, if you can't, you're going to break it, and then you need to take like a month off to like even be able to work properly again. And so I really appreciate that insight.
Exactly. Even if you're an electric car, you need some type of charge.
So Terrell, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really liked, I mean, I feel like hope that there is something I can do for education, like if like or get more people aware of design as a career just by talking to you. So you've done a lot of great work. Thank you so much for your contribution to the design community, and especially the Black design community.
No, I really appreciate the time today, Caden. And I think to just leave a dropping thought there for everyone that's out there, ways to help specific communities, go and sit down with them and ask them questions and get to know what their imagination is like and find out what they need is what's going to be most helpful for them.
That's awesome. Well, hey, Terrell, you have a good one.
Thank you, Caden.
Hey, listeners. Thanks again for listening to another episode of The Way of Product Design. If this episode resonated with you, please share it with your network and write a couple lines on why you found it useful. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast. And if you want to help the show grow, please leave a review on Apple or Google's podcast platforms. As always, thanks for listening. You have a good one.